Well, whether you have a couple of house plants or maybe you have a few acres out in the back of the lawn or maybe in the back 40, you may have some greenery to attend to. And at this time of the year, we're all anxious to get outdoors and stick some things in the ground so they'll grow. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Hope spring's eternal for gardeners in spring. And I think we tend to forget what didn't go too well last year. Maybe what did well, we kind of remember. And I know we're hoping for a very productive year this year. And Barb Larson's here to help us. She's a horticulturist with the University of Wisconsin Extension, works out of Kenosha County, been a guest many times, and she's always had a wealth of information to share, and we're always happy to have her with us for Garden Talk. Barb, thank you for stopping by.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be here when it's feeling like spring, at least here in the what I call the tropics of Wisconsin.
Yeah, the tropics of southern, more or less, Wisconsin. Yeah, we're going to hit 40 degrees today or thereabouts.
Yeah, or even down where I'm from, even a little bit warmer than that, and maybe 50s tomorrow. So,
wouldn't that be nice? Are you getting calls or anything from gardeners?
You know, they're starting now, especially now that the temperatures are warming up and the snow is finally melting, so people can see their gardens or their
at least
lawns,
part of it.
Then people are starting to think about it. But it's been pretty quiet this spring. And you know, I think that's okay because last year, I think everybody will remember, we had that abnormally warm March. And that was a real problem. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we continue with this gradual warm-up, which is just perfect. This is what we want.
Absolutely. Jim in New Berlin has a question for you. Let's go to him. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, great choice for the first call. Such a piece of question. I'm a novice. I want to start some seeds. I don't know much. I've done some reading, but I have basic questions like, how do you actually start them? Do you start them in soil? What do you use for lights? How close do you keep the lights? What temperature does the room have to be? When do I know I should put them in their second pot? Just give me 5 minutes of what the heck to do.
Well, you know, the first thing I always like to ask is, what are you trying to grow from seed? Because not everything do you have to start indoors. So what are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking of some broccoli-type plants, some Romanesco cauliflower, you know, larger, heavier plants like that.
Tomatoes, possibly?
100 days.
Yeah, well, and I'm trying to remember where are you from?
Milwaukee area.
Okay, you're too late to start all those indoors. Those are all cool season. So to get those things like broccoli and cauliflower and all of those that you would plant outdoors in the Milwaukee area, usually sometime in April, because they like those cooler weather and this cooler temperatures, to start them from seed now, they wouldn't get large enough to move them outside. So those you're probably going to have to go to your favorite garden center and look at getting transplants, at least for this year. Tomatoes and peppers were borderline, but you could probably still start some of those from seed indoors if you wanted to. And they do like warm temperatures. Just some general things for growing, starting things indoors, plants indoors from seed. I like to start with a nice potting soil, well-drained potting soil mix. Usually they're labeled as a seed starter mix. You want all of your containers nice and clean. If not new, then clean them out really well with a 10% bleach solution. You want to keep them moist but not wet. You don't have to have like a heat mat to start them with, especially if you're a beginner. But you want to keep them in a fairly warm room. And if you use supplemental light, you want to keep that light within about 2 inches of the tops of the plants so that it helps keep them short. So really look at the package or even go to the websites for the seed companies because they'll tell you how long from when you put the seed in to when it's transplantable size or move it outdoors and some of those things.
And there's some nice Extension has some great publications on for sort of beginning gardeners too.
Yeah. There are. And you're in the Milwaukee area. You have a great resource in the Milwaukee County Extension office there. Yeah. There's lots of master gardeners in that area. They can answer a lot of those questions, too.
And the, actually, on the cool season, he might. Could you start seeds later for planting toward fall?
Yeah, you can, Larry. And that's that would be the suggestion if you want to try it for those cool season and you want to do that seed starting. Those then you would start in something like July, mid-July, for planting out in very late August or into September for a fall crop.
Yeah.
May I ask another question?
Sure.
One of the things I'm going to plant, I know I don't have to start these indoors, is Roma beans.
Mm-hmm.
I just absolutely adore them. And I would like to have them all summer and into the fall. How do I do that? Is that called staggered planting, where you put a new crop in every 2 weeks?
Yep, it is. And that's exactly what I was going to suggest, is that you plant every week or two, and then that will stagger the harvest out. And you could even look at a couple of different kinds of those cultivars of those Romanesco beans, because some will take a little longer to get to harvest than others are. So by kind of very carefully planning out, you can extend your harvest that way, too.
And good luck. And call us at the end of the – sometime during the season. Keep us up to date on how it's going. Appreciate it very much, Jim. Teresa in Green Bay. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a reminiscent of last year. I have buds that are sprouted, daffodils.
Oh, bulbs that are sprouting?
Oh, yeah.
Already sprouted, and I know they got snowed on a couple of weeks ago, and they were already popping through the ground. I'm like, are they going to die?
Nope. No, they'll be fine. They're used to that. I've had daffodil leaves up for probably 3 weeks at least.
Oh, I've got bulbs.
Yeah, you've got the flowers also.
I've got the flowers.
Yeah, and you know what you will see sometimes is you'll see some browning or just a little bit of damage, but it really won't hurt them. You might want to consider, are they coming up early because they're in a little warmer spot? Are they on the south side of the house, near the house, so that it warms up? You may want to transplant them to someplace else that will not warm up quite so fast in the spring, so that it'll delay their sprouting or their emergence in the spring. If they're not a full 6 to 8 inches deep, if they're a tulip or a daffodil, that sometimes that means they'll get to out of the soil a little earlier too. So, but it won't hurt them. A lot of them do this.
Terrific. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Cindy in Westby. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about potatoes.
Yeah.
And I was told it's too cold to plant up here now because, you know, there's patchy snow on the garden, and I think the frost has gone down kind of deep around here. But I thought I could plant them in a barrel. But last year when we did this, we did some soil on the bottom, and then we put in a bunch of hay or straw, and they just died. They didn't really grow very good at all. And I was doing internet searching, and they said, oh, you just tip it over and you get all these potatoes, and it didn't happen for us. So I wondered what I did wrong.
Well, I think I would use potting soil for all of it to begin with, and not hay as part of what it's trying to grow in, because it needs some nutrients. Those potatoes, you know, that's the expanded, those tubers are tissue, and there's root systems in that area. So you need to make that barrel, and you add soil, potting soil to it. You know, you're in the Pewaukee area. My colleague Sharon Morrissey has done this for several years, where she's done potatoes in big barrels and dumps them out at the end of the growing season. So I will be honest with you, I haven't done this, so I would say even give Sharon a call or her office, the Milwaukee County Extension Office, a call. And I know she's written things on it. She may even have something on her website on it, too.
I'll have to go to that.
Yeah.
Morrissey website, M-O-R-R? Yeah,
well, it would be the Milwaukee County UW Extension website.
Okay.
And then look for
and
Sharon.
Don't straw at all, huh? You just use dirt all.
I think they're using dirt. Yeah, because straw doesn't provide any nutrients or anything like that. So, when you see straw used, it's used more as kind of a mulch on the top rather than where they're growing in it.
There is a technique called straw bale gardening.
And
you can put the potato.
I've heard that show. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can put the potatoes in, but I think in that when you're watering down the bales, you're adding some fertilizer in the water so that the bales have some nutrients in them, I think.
And I didn't hear that show, but I did have a master gardener that was telling me about it, and they said, yes, you're having to add a lot of fertilizer into that.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I will look up the Milwaukee County Extension.
Yep.
Sharon Morrissey.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Morrissey. She'll be happy to help out, or one of the master gardeners for sure. Bill in Pewaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How are you? I have a strong suspicion that I've been sabotaging myself by mulching black walnut leaves, and then after a year or two, putting that mulch on my garden.
Yeah, not a good idea.
It can take years.
What can I do about it? Is that going to stay in the garden forever?
Well, not forever, but it does take a long time for that juglone, which is the chemical that prevents a lot of plants from growing well. So it depends on the drainage, the microorganisms, and all sorts of things as far as the speed or the length of time it takes for that to break down. I know wetter soils, it takes longer for that juglone to break down. So I think you've kind of sabotaged yourself. I would decide I wanted to grow. You could go above it. You could also put grass or something, lawn in that area, and start your garden someplace else.
Maybe that's what I'll have to do.
Yeah.
Or either that, or you could do above the. I mean, you could make your own garden plots.
Yeah, you could do raised beds.
Raised beds is what I'm. You know, you'd still have to have something, some sort of barrier underneath to keep.
Yeah. Probably a fabric, because you don't want those roots getting down in there.
No.
So, you know, I have to tell you a funny story on this. I had a guy that called me a few years ago. And he was finding the black walnuts themselves buried in his raised beds. And he said the squirrels were doing it. And then he said, well, I guess they're getting even, because he was lobbing, he was throwing the black walnuts at the squirrels. So he said they were getting even with him and destroying
his
beds.
Probably, it's an easy place to dig. So there's,
that's right.
I'd never thought about that.
Yeah.
Well, so, there you go. There you go, Bill.
So maybe you're better off than that guy, Bill.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. What's going on with your garden plans for this year? Any questions? We can also talk about things like pruning as well, and certainly about the growing season in general. I know we got a question coming up about grape leaves and a disease connected with those leaves. So that's one of the things. What about you? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Actually, if you have a kind of a nice garden photo, that'd be kind of fun, too, to put up on the Facebook page. We've had some great ones, and I know there's one up there I want to talk about in a few minutes that you're going to have to see it to believe it. It is just a gorgeous flower. Our guest, Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Join in. If you've got a photo or a question, you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post there. Call us at 800-642-1234. Emails talk@wpr.org. And if you have access to a computer, I hope you can go to my Facebook page, because there is a Phil King sent Wonderful. Couple of wonderful photos, Barb. What have we got here?
They're beautiful. They're epimediums, which is usually used as a shade ground cover, but it has a really beautiful flower. And this one, he shows not only close-up of the flower, but also a little bit distance of the flower.
Yeah.
And they're in his greenhouses, it looks like. And so he's showing off these beautiful flowers.
Pink champagne, they're called.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
what lovely.
Gorgeous.
Oh, my goodness, that's lovely. Well, and Phil, thanks a lot for sending that in. I really appreciate it. They're just beautiful. I think the plants are, he says, 18 to 21 warm days behind the type of flower display this season. So, nice.
Yep.
There you
gorgeous.
Go.
Just gorgeous.
Gene and Almond, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I have some grapes that are located within our garden fence, and most years we mulch and we don't have to irrigate, but last year we just couldn't keep up. And I had some problems with mottling on the leaves that get dark spots and such, and then the grape skins themselves got patches of like a scale on them or something. And I was just wondering if that was one of the problems, too much water.
No, that doesn't sound like a too well. Did you overhead? I mean, you used a sprinkler to water them.
Yeah, it's like a rainbird.
Okay, overhead. Yeah. So I'm thinking it sounds like one of the fungal diseases, but I'm not able to tell you from that description exactly what it is.
Sure.
What I would suggest is, well, there's a couple of options. One is we do have a really nice extension publication, Growing Grapes in Wisconsin.
That's a great one.
You could look through that, go online at thelearningstore.uwex.edu and look through that and see if it describes what you were seeing last year in the disease section. We also have a number of fact sheets on the Plant Diagnostic Clinic, and it's possible it's in there. I don't think we have anything like that, but you could take a look in that, too.
The Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Thank you. So, or the just plain horticulture site, which is hort.uwex.edu, which also links to the Learning Store and the other ones. So I would look, do a little research with that, and then if you can't figure it out from there, keep an eye on things this spring or early summer, and as soon as you start to see something that might look like that, and you may not see that this year, get it into your local extension office and see if you can. If they can identify what's going on, or they can
send it
to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah,
good.
I have one more question.
Sure.
As far as pruning, I think pruning should have been done already.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. With the grapes.
Yeah, I couldn't get in. You know, with the snow and stuff, we've got quite a bit of it, and. Is there a date past which I shouldn't prune at all?
You know, in down in my neck of the woods, we usually do recommend February for pruning. But you're enough farther north. If you haven't started, those buds haven't started to swell, you're not starting to get new growth, you probably are still okay. So go out and take a good look at them. And that publication, that Growing Grapes in Wisconsin,
perfect.
If you don't have that, that will tell you exactly how to prune those.
That's so many people have said to me, man, is that a great publication.
Yeah.
So it's Growing Grapes in Wisconsin.
Yep.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, everyone. I know it tells you exactly how to prune grapes. And people have followed it and said to me afterwards, it worked.
Yeah. And that's the other thing with disease. Quite often, if we can keep plants a little bit more open so you get better airflow through there, it really cuts down on the fungal diseases,
too. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you look at the vineyards, Wallersheim Winery, for example. I mean, there's some space there between there.
Right. Yeah, grapes require quite a lot of pruning.
Mike in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Along the lines of the black walnut question earlier, I've got a whole bunch of red oak sawdust, and I wonder if that would be a good or a bad mulch for my garden paths and the garden plants.
Paths, okay, not the best. Around your plants, no, unless you want to add lots and lots and lots of nitrogen fertilizer. The problem with sawdust is it's very high in what's called carbon. So in order for the microorganisms to break that down, they use up a lot of the nitrogen.
In the soil.
And because, as Larry says, they suck it up. Then your plants don't have it for growing. So that's why things like sawdust and we don't recommend for putting into generally in a garden. Now, sometimes if you don't have plants growing right next to it, for pathways, it might be okay.
And you can still set that sawdust aside and let it, cook for
yeah you can and some people although we don't like it that much in compost, you can work it in and compost it in with your other compost, but you're going to have to again add lots of nitrogen, so that mean either lots of green stuff or you're going to have to use a nitrogen fertilizer in there. So it's possible. It's an organic product, it will decompose, but it's kind of tough on.
Yeah,
you don't want to use it a lot around plants.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, I mean, if you got a corner set aside where you can throw, if you got a lot of sawdust, I mean, I just let it sit and turn it every so often, keep it wet, and just over a few years, it's going to...
Yeah, that's true. You can do it that way. Keep an eye on it and don't get it too deep either.
No.
So...
There you go. Maxine and Spooner, hello.
Thank you. I have two large arborvita in each side of my house. They're about 30 years old, and they get pruned lightly every spring, but I'm wondering how far down can you prune those? I'd like to really tame them, and when is a good time?
Well, you have to stay in the green area on arborvitae. So they can't be pruned back a tremendous amount.
Uh-huh.
And especially if you've been pruning even lightly over a period of years,
mm-hmm.
you may find that green section is pretty narrow, right on the outer edge of the arborvitae.
Yeah.
So my recommendation is if these arborvitae are really getting to the point where they're getting really large and really too big for the space and there's not much green left that you can prune them back, you may want to think about replacing them.
Okay.
So,
yep.
And pruning arborvitae, you could do that now. They start growing later on. So,
yep.
But just, you got to stay in that green part.
Okay. Thank you so mm-hmm. much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. And actually, John in Edgerton has maybe a similar question about arborvitae. Hi, John.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I don't know if it's similar. I have a double row of arborvitae about 25 feet long, and my neighbor on his side parked his construction trailer, kind of leaned against him last year, and that whole section turned brown.
Yeah.
But the rest of the tree looks halfway decent. So is there any way to save these, or can I just cut out all the brown part? Or?
Well, you could cut it out and see how ugly it is. And
not going to come back.
No.
It's on his side of the driveway.
And then make a decision from there.
Well, what I did was I ordered some from Sheboygan County every spring. They have a tree sale.
Yeah.
And I ordered like six of them, about 4 feet high, I guess they are. And I wonder if I could just slip them six in there along that brown line. Would that blend in? Would they take, do you think?
I wouldn't. You've got to have them out a little bit from those ones that are existing so that they have room to grow and that they get light. You don't want to shade them out.
Right. Otherwise, you're going to have the same problem.
Yeah, they're not going to take. So you don't want them right up next to it. You might actually be better off. I know it will look funny for a while, is taking down those damaged ones and then just replacing them with the new ones.
Yeah, I had thought of that, too. I just thought there might be an easier fix than that, but...
No. No.
Yeah, yeah, no.
If you got a little green paint, maybe you can spray paint them.
Well, okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you know, the sad thing is arborvitae just really took a hit by the drought last year. And And I see so many either really sad looking or dead arborvitas because, you know, they're the white cedars from cedar swamps. They like moisture and they did not do well.
I had our neighbors on our back lot have a whole string of arborvita and they're beautiful, but this winter we had these two big wet snowfalls and they were bent over, so over onto my side, and I thought, I don't want to lose these. So I was out there getting this, carefully getting the snow off, and they look like they're going to come back straight up.
Yeah, sometimes, quite often they will, depending on how long they've been bent over and if the wood was actually damaged or broken when they were bent over. But
Gary in Brookfield, let's turn to you next. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The question, the question I have is, I have been trying to grow what are called Northern Lights azaleas.
Yep.
They come out of the University of Minnesota, and I'm not having a lot of luck. And I'm wondering, you know, if you have any suggestions.
Well, what you're saying, you're not having luck. Are you? What are you seeing, or what's the problem?
What I'm happening is I plant them, and then they disappear over the winter.
Oh, you mean they don't come back in the next? They die.
Yeah, I mean they're a nice looking plant in summer and fall, and I really worked on them last year with keeping them watered and everything. But they like disintegrated over the winter. I put straw around them to protect them, and I had screening around them also to keep animals from eating them.
Uh huh.
They disintegrated. They're not there.
When did you put the mulch on?
Probably like October, end of October, around Halloween.
Yeah. You know what? These are also really hardy. Yeah. They don't have to be mulched.
Yeah. I think the mulch might have done them in. To be perfectly honest, is you put it on. If anything, you put them on too early.
Yeah, and they don't need that extra. So, Northern Lights, my concern with those is that although they're more tolerant of our little higher soil pHs, would be it. What's your soil pH, and is it too high? Because I know there are some in that Milwaukee area that are even up into the 8s, which may be way too high. They do like that moist, well-drained soil. So is it clay? Is it heavy? Or do you have some?
It's pretty good topsoil I had put in when I built the house.
Okay. Then the other is to remember, if something is cold hardy, and they are definitely, that's why they were developed in Minnesota, is so that they could take, zone 4, 3, or 4. I think they're 4s, but they are cold hardy, especially in southern Wisconsin. So
if anything, they don't
need to be mulched.
No, and if you did, you'd want to wait till the ground was perfectly frozen solid.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Gary, and thanks. The other thing is, I would plant them in either south or southeast kind of area, but not up next to the house.
There you go. Thank you, sir. Jerry in Port Washington. Hello.
Hello. I had called a couple of weeks ago, and because I had an arborist come through last fall, and he recommended that my trees should be fertilized, and the person then said, well, no, that's not really needed. However, I wasn't quick enough to say that my yard here is basically clay with a few inches of topsoil on it, 6 to maybe 8 inches of topsoil on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering if maybe there, I just didn't get it out fast enough.
No. My advice is the same and these are established trees.
They've been here 5 years, 6 years maybe.
Yeah. Do you fertilize your lawn?
I do.
Okay. Guess what? The trees probably are getting plenty. And clay soils hold and are fairly high in nutrients. What I always look at for trees is, are they growing at the rate you would expect them to? And if they're healthy, if they're the right color, if they're putting on the right kind of growth. Now, with a clay soil, they may be more stunted because they're trying to get those roots established through that heavy clay soil. But I don't think it's a fertilizer problem.
Maybe water is more. I mean, you want to make sure they're getting plenty of water at the right time, per week.
I did water, yes. I did water very regularly last summer.
Yeah, especially last summer. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one... the one tree that really concerned me was an oak tree that it just never greened up. It just kind of stayed, the leaves came out, and they stayed yellowish instead of coming real green, and it stayed that way all summer long.
What kind of, do you know is kind, what kind of oak? Is it a pin oak?
You know, he told me the different kinds of oaks, and I'm like, by the time we got through walking past all the, I'd totally forgotten.
Okay. Well, a couple of things. One is, if these have only been in 4 or 5 years, it's possible that that one just did not overcome transplant, and it's struggling, and it's not doing well, and it's not established a good root system. So okay. You could even dig down and see if there looks like there's nice, healthy roots down there. You only have to go down about 6 inches or so and go out, you know, I don't know, outside the planting hole to see if there's roots outside that planting hole. Then the other thing is, if it's pin oak, since you're, Port Washington, you're still in that area in southeastern Wisconsin where the soil pHs can be pretty high. And pin oaks like acidic soil, or at least lower soil pHs than what we often have in southeastern and southern Wisconsin. Okay. So that's probably why it is. So, yeah, I would do a soil test, which would be a good idea anyway.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
So you know what you're dealing with.
And when you send, when you send in, you say, okay, I've got an oak here in this area. And then they'll come back and tell you,
Yeah. Yeah,
this needs to be more acid if this oak's going to live or whatever. They'll tell you.
Sure. And white oaks sometimes will even be chlorotic, or which is yellow from poor drainage too. So I mean, there's different possibilities. So I would you always want a soil test to begin with, and now's a great time to do a soil test.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
You get a quick response back.
Yep.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot, Jared, for calling. Appreciate it. And to get a soil test, we have Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratories, a couple in around, many private companies around the state.
There are, and I always recommend that people go to a commercial soil testing lab, whether they use the University of Wisconsin Soils Lab or whether they go to one of the private ones, just because they calibrate their instruments and, and you get recommendations too, which
that's
you wouldn't get for a home kind of thing. So, and you can go on the website. A lot of people will call me and say, oh, do I have to have a special bag? No, you don't. A zip-top bag works fine, whatever, to send it in. But all the information and the directions are on the Soil Lab website.
All right, there we go. Let's go to Janice in Grafton next. Hi, Janice.
I have a tropical hibiscus that I did not water as well as I should, and now it looks like it's gone. Its leaves are curled up, and I watered it really well, but it might have been too late. If I prune this down to the soil level, would that do any good?
Possibly. I think I would wait, even if the leaves are curled, I would kind of see, are the stems still flexible? Are you just rewatered it? Are new buds coming out? Is it going to start to resprout at all?
No, I've been looking at it and it just looks pretty sick.
It looks pretty sick and it's all dried up?
Yes.
Okay. If it's that bad, that goes in the category of if it looks like it's pretty well dead, what are you going to hurt if you cut it back?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Good luck, Janice. nothing lost there.
That's right. If it's dead and you're going to throw it out, or you think it's dead and you're going to throw it out, try it. Who knows?
Absolutely. Riley in Darboy? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks a lot for calling, Riley. What can we do for you?
Yeah, Darboy was right.
Where is
Darboy?
Just outside of Appleton. I'm not sure it's actually incorporated. Probably.
Oh.
But just east of Appleton.
Okay.
Well, I've got kind of a low-lying area in my backyard. It's a drainage area. It's not really a creek, but it's wet a lot of the time.
Okay.
And I'd like to populate that. It's mostly lawn right now, and I'd like to populate it. We only recently moved in there with trees and maybe some prairie plants. But I'd like stuff that's going to take to the wetter soil. Obviously, last year, notwithstanding, it usually remains pretty wet most of the time.
Yeah. And you You have I think what you're thinking is the way to go, which is to look at native plants that would like wet soils. And we have a number of them. So I would check and get lists of natives and take a look at things that are native to wet soils in eastern Wisconsin. And there are a number of trees that fit into that category, too. I would, just like we told the gentleman earlier, have a soil test done so that you know what you're dealing with for soil pH in that area. But you have lots of options.
Yeah. It's a place like Prairie Nursery. If you go online to their website, they actually have, they specify. And I'm sure other nurseries
there are other ones
same,
too,
do
yeah.
the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, Prairie Nursery?
Yeah, it's one. Yeah, there's others.
There are a number of we're very blessed in Wisconsin with having a number of nurseries that specialize in native plants. And so Larry mentioned one, Prairie Nursery, but there's a number of other ones in the state, too.
And they will actually list, you know, they'll say plants for wet areas, you know, will be an example. And in terms of trees,
Well, yeah, I was going to say it depends on what you want. What I put in, which is not native, in my wet area in my backyard is bald cypress. And it's worked really well. Now, be careful with the wet soil trees that you want to be careful, or unless it's way away and it's not near any of your sewage or water lines or anything like that. You want to avoid things like willows and silver maples because they will get into water lines and cause all sorts of problems.
And they're messy, too.
And they're messy. So, and some of those ones that are native to our floodplain, and those areas tend to be a little messier because that's the way they evolved, was so that they would knock down and come back. So you do have to be a little more careful with trees. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, and the one that I would not recommend that comes into my mind right away is green ash. But we even talked about the some of the oaks will take a little bit, swamp white oak, if your soil pH is low enough, will take a little wetter soil. So there are lots
pretty,
of options.
Swamp white oak is a pretty tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have lots of options.
Is there any concern about too much water
there's always some concern.
Well, and that's where you're going to have to figure out, and even where you decide where to plant on there, if it's on a bank, some of the trees, especially some of the oaks, will have to be a little higher up on the bank so they're not wet year-round versus what would come lower down. A lot of things will take spring flooding and spring wet, but if it's wet in August, that can cause problems.
Yep.
So it's you have to watch. I know this is a new area for you, so you have to kind of watch the patterns, too. Yeah. That will help.
And good luck, Riley.
Thank you much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. Another person, that'd be fun to have him follow up and let us know how things go by the end of the summer.
I want to see pictures, Riley.
Yeah, send some photos. Dan and Colby, we'll get to you in just a second. Just a reminder, our guest today is Barb Larson, and she is horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County, and one of our regular guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here on this edition of Garden Talk. We're visiting with Barb Larson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Kenosha County. Lots of things we're talking about, a variety of things, of flowers and vegetables and trees and lawns. So we've gotten into all of it. You may have a question. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. And we have just one caller online right now, so we'll get you on pretty quickly here. And so call or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Post a question or a comment there. Dan in Colby. Thank you for calling, Dan.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Barb. Hi. Enjoying the show here. I've got dahlia bulbs and some callas and stuff, and I'm having trouble getting them to pretty much winter. I dig them up and I put them on a screen, kind of spread them out, put them in the basement, and they're feather light, just dried out. I don't think they survived.
Yeah.
What's the trick? Do they got to be like cold or, I mean, cool or, I mean, there's no cold place in my house. What do you do?
Yeah, it's a lot harder now that we don't have, most of us don't have cool basements anymore. But you said you kind of leave them spread out on a screen for most of the winter.
Yeah,
I think that's the problem. They do need to, I think that's why they're drying out on you. You may want to pack them into basically a pretty dry or almost completely dry kind of peat moss. Some people use sawdust. Maybe you can get that guy's sawdust from earlier. Or something else. I know. Okay, this is, I'm going to confess, this is the lazy gardener. I didn't get to it. I've just tossed them in either a paper sack or in a 5-gallon bucket. And just because they're closer together, that has helped. So I think it's you're going to need some way to help keep a little more moisture around them.
What if you had a pail full of sand and you had it just slightly? Would that work?
I don't know about sand. My concern is whether it would abrade the outside a little bit, and then you can get, then they'll start either rotting or deteriorating.
Right.
So that's why usually you try to get something that's a little bit softer or cushier. And I know some people will even check them, especially if they put them in either a peat moss or a sawdust, and even spritz a little moisture on them a couple of times during the winter if they seem to be shriveling a little bit. So I would try something along those lines.
Thank you, Dan.
Is there a temperature constraint?
I would keep them in that. Usually it's that about 40 to 50 degree range. So if your basement is up in the 60s or so, that may be the other issue.
Yeah.
Some people have had good luck in cold frames, overwintering bulbs and tubers in cold frames. Attached garages sometimes will work, especially if you keep them up next to the house. They won't get too cold. The old refrigerators are sometimes used for plants.
Yep.
Because they won't dry them out. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have lots of people. I actually had an email from Barb. I want to get to that. It came up quite a while back. She says, I've heard that one way of coping with potato beetles is to plant after July 1st. Do you know how much that will affect yield for someone living around Eau Claire, Wisconsin?
I don't know any potato that would mature if you planted them July 1st and could get them big enough to harvest anything in Wisconsin that way. So I think that wouldn't work. So I would recommend things like floating row covers and that kind of thing to help keep those potato beetles off.
Yeah, because otherwise you're planting the potatoes, they're going in pretty early.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could try it. I'd say maybe middle of June.
And I would definitely look for something that has a very short growing season then.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. Christina.
And then let us know.
There again. Well, as we always say, gardeners are great experimenters. And, why not try it if you're in a situation in the Eau Claire area?
Yeah.
I'd be tempted to, say, okay, let me try the middle of June.
Yeah.
At least a couple more weeks.
You just really want to squeeze it in there.
Christine in Rosendale. Hello. Christine, are you there?
Yes, this is Christine.
Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, it's wonderful to be on this show. I am not going to put anything in my vegetable garden this year, and I do have quite a bit of space that I'm dealing with, and so I'm looking for something that will keep it both attractive and but yet be easy to till up when I want to replant it the next summer.
Oh, well, this is your perfect opportunity to use what's called the green manure crops, so a cover crop. And actually, I think the most attractive are the clovers. And most of those, it will grow some of the white clovers would work for you.
They'll fix a little nitrogen, too.
Yes, yeah. And then you can till it in and add nitrogen and organic matter and all sorts of things. I mean, the other cover crops tend to be things like the grasses, the rye or oats or, you know, some buckwheat, some of those kinds of things. But personally, I don't think they're quite as attractive as the clovers are.
All right.
What about, isn't the clover going to be hard to get out of there? Quite frankly, I've weeded tons of clover out of my garden because we planted a lot of clover in our yard. Our yard is mostly violet.
Yeah, there is the disadvantage. It is a little bit harder. And I have to confess, I cannot remember off the top of my head. There are some clovers that are a little easier to deal with than others. And without, this is in the, I have to look this kind of thing up. And you could, you could try, check with your local extension office, so your county extension office, or send me an email and I'll look it up for you.
And, you know, buckwheat doesn't look all that bad.
I mean,
you could put it in, and it's definitely you're not going to have any trouble with coming back.
No, but you want to make sure it doesn't go to seed either. So any of those,
yes,
you want to prevent them from going to seed. So
then you'd mow it?
Yep.
Yeah, once or twice.
Yep.
Just before.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, there is and I don't know how easy it is to find that there are publications about cover crops, and Extension has some publications on cover crops, and that's where I would go look at it. So you could try that, the Learning Store, and see what's in there. It's one of those where I don't look it up often enough to remember it.
So the Learning Store
UWEX.edu. Or you could Google Wisconsin Extension Learning Store.
Yep. Thanks, Christine.
Okay. Sorry, I can't give you a definite.
Diane in Prairie du Sac. Let's see if I can get her on there. Oops. Got Mark in Dubuque instead. Hi, Mark. Sorry.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Well, you great. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a quick question for you. I've got a utility company that's going to come by on an easement.
Okay.
And replace some stuff. And I've got hundreds of hostas, and I've got lots and lots of lilies. And I want to dig those up and transplant them. And I don't know if I can dig them up now and transplant them.
Sure.
Will they survive?
Oh, yeah.
Or... Okay.
But you know, the ground might be frozen yet.
Yeah,
but.
Well, let's see. Dubuque? Oh, yeah. No, I don't think you're frozen anymore because I...
Oh, no, Dubuque.
Dubuque, it's not frozen anymore, is it?
It just got to be about 45 degrees today.
Yeah. So pick one of these days, maybe tomorrow, if it's not too wet. My only concern is digging in it when it was real wet, just because it's...
Yeah.
But they can all be moved. Are lilies or daylilies?
What's that?
Lilies or daylilies?
Well, I've got hosta.
Yeah, you said...
And I've got iris. Excuse me, not iris. I've got lilies, like spring lilies, different stuff.
Okay, all right. You know, this is another one of those. The hostas will be no problem at all. And daylilies would be no problem at all. Even some of those summer bulbs, what you may lose is they may not bloom this year. But you can. My guess is they probably will, because the summer blooming lilies, we usually plant them.
If
we get them from, you know, the garden center or mail order or whatever, it's this time of year. So I would think you would be fine on moving all of those. And I don't expect you to have any problem with them.
All right.
Okay, well, like with the hostas, let them sprout a little bit?
No. You can, if you can find them, move them.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, if they're going to be coming in with this easement, you want to get them out of there so you can save them. But you want it the roots anyway. So go ahead and, when you get a nice day, get them moved.
Okay.
They're dormant. Well, it's actually easier to move them now when they're dormant.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Tim in Fairchild. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi, Larry.
What's on your mind?
Well, you were talking about caller a couple calls ago was talking about wanting to plant potatoes, you know, in July.
Yeah.
Well, I've been planting this for all my life. I've talked to you before, but that would not be a problem.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah, if you can, if you've done it, Tim, I am perfectly happy to believe that it can happen. Although, as you say, Barb, you need.
Yeah, what variety did you use that you planted then?
Well, because most potatoes are a 90-day variety.
Okay, all right. That's what we need. Thanks. That's good.
That is very good. 90-day varieties. And Tim, appreciate that call. Barb Larson, horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension. She is in Kenosha County and has been one of our regulars here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's always great to have her with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about those indoor plants, talk about outdoor plants. It's, you know, when they're doing well, it's a great pleasure, but sometimes insects or disease or the weather attack, and then we get some problems. Larry Mueller here. My guest today can help us solve some of those problems. Barb Larson is our guest, by the way, and she is the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Kenosha County. It's always great to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page, post a photo or a question there at the Larry Mueller Show. And we always love to have you do that. Click like while you're there so we can send you some regular updates on upcoming show topics. And, of course, the phone number, 1-800-642-1234. That phone, those phone lines are full. So let's try and empty a few here. Diane in Prairie du Sac. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello there. My question for the day is I do have a peony tree. And this spring when I looked out the window, I saw that there was three broken branches. So I went out and I brought them in and cut the ends off, put it in water, and I see that it's sprouting out. But is there any way to save these branches that were cut during the winter months?
Well, you said they're sprouting out, meaning the you're getting leaves and flowers, or are you getting roots?
No, not roots. I'm just getting, the buds are getting quite fat, and I can see that it'll leaf out, maybe.
You know, I would just look at this as that you've done forcing of branches, and hopefully, I've never heard of anybody force tree peonies, so you'll have to let me know whether or not they actually bloom.
Yeah.
So you may just get the leaves out.
So there's no way of saving these branches?
No.
Unless most tree peonies are grafted, so they're.
Oh. What do you suppose? Do you think something ate at the branches that they broke? It's in a very protected place.
I have no idea. I mean, it could have been something that ate them. It could have been in my backyard. The dogs would have run over it. we mentioned we've had a couple of very heavy wet snows, it could be even wet snow load on it that cracked them.
That's my guess.
Yeah, that would be my best guess, too.
Now that you say that, it would be mine also.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Well, I do thank you very much.
Thanks, Diane. And Tom in Decorah, Iowa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, hello to both of you, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a nice long grove of dogwoods, and I've allowed them to grow out too far. And I'm wondering how much can you safely prune back in the springtime and still keep them healthy? I don't want to go too far with it.
Is this a tree dogwood or shrub dogwoods?
They're shrubs.
Okay, the shrub dogwoods, because they're multi-stem dogwoods, lots of them coming up from the ground, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Those are ones where you can go in and prune out about a quarter to a third of the biggest, largest stems all the way at the ground line.
Okay.
So, and you can do that every year, and that will help keep the size down. You can also, if you prune the ones that are kind of spreading out farther, you can, even if those are newer ones, you can prune those, you know, get rid of those. But any of those multi-stemmed shrubs, that's the way to prune them. The dogwoods are spring bloomers, so in order to have maximum bloom, you could do it shortly after they bloom. I like to do these kinds of things usually in March or early April before they start to bud out, because I can get in there. I don't have to fight through the leaves.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And can I prune from sort of the top down, so to speak, as well, a little bit?
Well, you could shape them, but if you're going to shape them so that you shorten them a little bit, do that after they bloom and then cut back to a side bud. But you're going to find that if you cut out those heaviest, biggest stems, they're also often the tallest stems. So it's going to bring the size down anyway. So do first and then see. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Ann in Marshfield, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a silty clay soil, and I inherited a lot of landscaping from the previous owner, but it was empty. The house was empty for a while, so it's overgrown with honeysuckle and all kinds of things. But the worst is the bird's foot trefoil. It's in the lawn, and I can't get it out of the flower beds.
And you don't want to use chemicals?
I could use chemicals, but I would kill whatever else is in there, too, I think,
Not
right?
necessarily.
No, no. In the lawn, I would spot treat with a broadleaf weed killer. Not use all over, not use the weed and feed, but spot treat. In the flower beds, you can shield your flowers that you don't want, and you could treat it with glyphosate if you're not opposed to using a chemical.
You can actually paint it right on.
Yeah, yeah. I've used like foam paint brushes, or I've had some people do what they call it, the glove of death, and I know people have heard this before, where you put a plastic glove on, and then you put a cotton glove over, and then put the herbicide on the glove and then touch it, you know, rub it on. So,
would you spell that, please?
Glyphosate. It would be Roundup would be an example.
Yeah, Roundup Cleanup.
Oh, Roundup. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get the one, though, that's you don't want something that's long acting, because that means it has other things in it. So you only want glyphosate in it. Glyphosate is like the ibuprofen, and it's the generic name.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Anna.
Good luck with it.
Robin Kenosha, hello.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Great, good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I'd like to use a rain barrel this year.
Okay.
But I have a couple, like the blue 55-gallon plastic drums. I used to house washer fluid. Would it be possible if I scrubbed it out, cleaned it out, you know, the best I absolutely possibly could? Could I use that as a rain barrel, or would I essentially have to go out and get one?
If you think you can get it completely cleaned out, I think you're okay. And
yeah.
I was going to say washer fluid is basically a soap solution. If
yeah,
I'm thinking,
not that big of a deal,
you know?
Right? Yeah, like with pretty much alcohol or so.
Yeah,
yeah, no problem there.
Yep, a lot of rain barrels are recycled containers of some kind.
Yep.
So, okay.
Thanks, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
You bet. And Kathy in Green Bay. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi. All right. My question is, we moved to Green Bay from Shawnee, Wisconsin, and we had a flowering almond bush that grew just beautiful there, and we had no trouble with rabbits. And now when we moved to Green Bay, we've got rabbits, and they're eating the branches off and
mm-hmm.
everything. What can I use to put around it or on it? Because I'm going to have to get a new one again. So what's the best thing?
Well, if you, is it mostly a problem in the wintertime? Or the rabbits chewing on it year-round?
Well, what I could say probably year-round.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, wintertime, I would use, I would fence it off. And that's the best way, just try to keep them out of it. And it, so short-term, you find that that's the biggest problem. Otherwise, if it's year-round in summertime, you may want to look at, there are repellents, rabbit repellents. The problem is for all of them, you have to, every time it rains, you have to go out and put it back it in. So there are commercial rabbit repellents. I've also had, and I haven't tried it. This is not a researched anything. So remember that, but I've had lots of gardeners tell me they've had luck with baby powder too, that they don't like the smell.
I like the smell of baby.
Yeah. When I, many years ago with the University of Illinois Extension, we had one of the specialists down there that did recommend that. And then I quit for a while and recommending it. And I had somebody come back and say, why don't you take baby powder anymore? So, that they found it worked. So, but for the winter time, I would fence it off.
Okay.
To keep them out.
If you put pepper spray down around it.
You know, it's sometimes that may work, but it's still a repellent, so you're going to have to retreat every time it rains.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I guess I'm not going to try baby powder because I don't have any here, but I will try fencing it off because I think that's probably the best way.
Yeah, especially those baby rabbits, you're going to have to have a small, pretty small gauge fencing on it.
Yep.
Yeah, well, we got a nice Brittany Spaniel that loves to chase the rabbits.
There you go. The greyhounds take care of the rabbits in my backyard.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. You have a great day, too, Kathy. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
David in Garnavillo, Iowa. Hello.
Hello, sir. How are we doing today?
Just great. What's on your mind, Dave?
Well, every year, usually the day before the 4th of July in front of our house, because the parade route goes right by our house, we always plant an American flag flower display.
Oh, good for you.
And I'm just wanting to know if there's any flowers that I can plant that'll come up every year instead of having to replant every year, usually the night before.
Yeah, you know, the problem is getting the flower at exactly the right time.
Yeah.
We get this call a lot from mothers of daughters who are getting married and they want this certain kind of flower on exactly July 21 or something.
Yeah.
You know?
And, yeah. It's really hard. You know, I guess I would recommend a combination if you want of perennials that would bloom mid, you know, that late June, early July time period. By doing a mixture of them, then if one isn't in bloom, maybe one of the other ones would be. But you're not going to have the same display that you get with annual flowers. I mean, it's just different.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
Good luck. Send us a picture.
Will do, sir.
I want to see a picture of that. That would be. That's
Cool. That would be.
Pretty perennials that form a flag.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Roy and Iconomowoc, although David, I think, is going to be stuck pretty much.
I think
the night
if he wants to form a flag, I think he's going to have to stick with the annuals.
Roy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. It's Iconomowoc, right?
Yeah. Iconomowoc, yes.
Yep.
I have a question here that I have two amaryllises, and I got them from my granddaughter, one 3 years ago and the other one 2 years. And what happened, they flowered and all this, and the one that is called Amaryllis sherry nymph, and Amaryllis samba. Well, that one, the samba, came up with 4 stalks.
Wow.
And, man, I'm thinking, what's going on? So the thing is, I thought, well, okay, I'll just water them and make sure that they rejuvenate. And the cherry nymph, which only had 1 stalk, now it's blooming. And I've got 2 stalks, and I'm thinking, What's going on? It can't be that I'm a good...
Well, you must be if you're getting multiple flower stalks.
And you got them situated in exactly the right spot,
yeah,
too.
Well, yeah.
It's on the west side of the... Well, the west side, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had 10 leaves on that one. That,
yeah.
10. And I thought, it looks so pretty. I thought, well, I'll just wait until it dies down. And then leaves fell off a little bit. And then all of a sudden I've got to cut off the rest of them. And here these two stalks are.
Yeah.
Beautiful amaryllis. And it's not Christmas, is it?
No, no, but some of these newer varieties of amaryllis, they're really built up for a bulb that has a lot of energy in it, will send up multiple flower stalks. So this is, it's not unusual. It is for ones that you keep year to year, but especially new ones that are coming from nurseries, garden centers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty common to get at least two stalks on a lot of these big bulbs, you know, the premium ones.
Yep.
So, just enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at it and thinking, okay, now as soon as it completely blossoms and sort of dies off, I think, okay, I'll cut the stalk off. And then I still have about six of these beautiful leaves.
Yeah.
And the other one only has one, and I thought, I'm not going to bury them in the garden. I'm going to put them in the closet. That's what I did before, I think. And so, well, anyway, thank you for this information.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Should see my lime tree now. Oh, my God. Well, it's actually my wife's. I bought it for her, but that thing is not supposed to be flowering so much right now. I think that's more like it should be in the fall, but we've got these grow lights on it.
It's really happy, huh?
Oh, it's happy. It is very happy. Bill in West Salem, we're going to have lots of limes. Bill in West Salem, your turn. Hi.
Hello, Larry and your guest. Great program, like usual.
Thank you.
I have fruit trees. I got three of them. I have an apricot tree. It's self-pollinating. It's a zone 3 and 4. I know they're not popular in this neck of the woods, apricot. But anyway, and I also have apple trees. My question's twofold. One, when will they blossom? They're two-year-old trees. That's number one. Number two question, what and when do I fertilize them with?
Okay. So they probably, even with a two-year-old tree, they're probably not mature enough yet.
Okay.
To blossom. So, and it varies based on the rootstock that they're on. So certain rootstocks, depending on how dwarfing they are, some trees will bloom bloom a little earlier than others will. So so that's one of them. You just have to be a little patient, let them mature a little bit more.
So 2 years, I'm asking too much for them to do it in 2 years.
Yes. Well, and last year doesn't count because the buds on the fruit trees started to open so early or were expanding so early, and then we had that cold snap. And we had lots and lots and lots of damage. So, who knows last year? So you just have to wait and see this year.
Sounds good.
And fertilization is based on the growth rate, the type of tree. So this is another one where I'm going to send you to the Learning Store. We have very good publications on growing apples in Wisconsin. Okay. We have another one on growing, it's peaches and cherries and those, and you can kind of read between the lines and pick up apricots in there. So,
okay. Where do I go?
That's Learning Store.
learningstore.uwex.edu. Can you repeat it one more time?
Sure.
Learning Store.
All one word.
Dot uwex.
Uwex.
E-X.
Oh, E-X. Okay.
Dot.
E-D-U.
E-D-U.
Yep. For education.
Yeah. And then look under, it'll say home and garden, or there's garden and something like that on the one side, and go to the fruits and the fruit trees.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. Mary in Partyville, what's on your mind?
I got a couple questions about my clematis. It's a gorgeous clematis that gets as big as a dinner plate, the flowers.
Ah, good.
Oh.
And they were pink at one time, and then now they're white.
Yeah.
And I didn't you know, prune it back. But now I'm wondering if I can prune it back before it starts growing.
Yeah. Yes, you can. The tricky part about the clematis is that there are basically three different kinds of clematis, and based on when they bloom, is the amount you prune back. So I would just do some, my guess is with a big one, it's probably one of the midsummer bloomers.
It's a big one. It's, I mean, the flowers is big, and it gets kind of top heavy. I have it on a trellis.
Okay. All right. So I'm thinking this is not one where you do a way pruning back. I think you just do some cleanup in this one. This is another one that I know we've got the three amounts of pruning back, but I don't remember. I'm sorry, off the top of my head. I know the fall bloomers you can cut way back at this time of year, but the summer bloomers, much less so.
I think it's a fall bloomer.
Yeah, well, usually the fall bloomers are little flowers.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well,
yeah.
I got a picture of it, and it is amazing how big the flowers are.
Mm-hmm.
You should send it to my Facebook page.
Yeah, put it on.
Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can put it up.
Oh,
and
really? About getting it to color pink?
Well, that has to do with the soil, isn't it?
Well, and you know, I'm wondering if it just shouldn't have changed color, but a lot of those will fade. They'll come out pink and then kind of fade to a whitish. Is that what's happening on it?
It's kind of a real pale pink, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is that might be what it is.
But what about fertilizer? What's a good fertilizer for that?
You know, if you've got a pretty, this is one, you're already telling me it's growing a lot, so I don't know that you need to fertilize it very much, if at all.
Yeah.
If you've got it mulched, and it's in pretty good soil, you probably don't need to fertilize it.
Yeah, this time of year, you know, you may not want to be zipping it up.
No, and you know, I'm just not a big fan of fertilizing trees and shrubs. We know trees, shrubs, a lot of the especially the woody vines, like the clematis, most perennials. If you have pretty good soil, you don't need to regularly fertilize them.
No, and if you do, and they're young, they might like to keep the roots right there where all that fertilizer is and not work their way down into other parts.
And if you put a lot of nitrogen on a lot of plants, you end up with lots of green growth and no flowers. So
there you go. And here we go. Barbara,
we're all done, huh?
we're out of time. Thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Thanks very much.
Barb Larson is horticulture educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension, and she works out of Kenosha County. Great to have her with us. And certainly, thanks so much. I want to just mention, Shar sent a note that Baraboo was named one of the 20 best small towns to visit in 2013. And that's pretty cool. Smithsonian Institute gave Baraboo that honor. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.